Bicatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Bicatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're pulling you into a true story that honestly reads like the most intense thriller. We're immersing ourselves in Ilion Wu's incredible book, Master Slave Husband Wife.
That's right. And our goal here is really to get into the sources behind this extraordinary escape in 1848. We're talking about Ellen and William Craft and how they fled slavery. But it wasn't just, you know, running away.
No, not at all.
It was this deeply complex act, reclaiming their marriage, their identities, their basic humanity, really, all through this incredibly clever and frankly dangerous performance.
And it feels so relevant now, doesn't it? Their story is this classic American tale of, well, inventing yourself. And in doing so, they sort of accidentally expose how flimsy the ideas of race, gender, and class actually were back then.
Exactly. It gives you a lens to look at the social structures we still live with today.
So before we jump into the escape itself, maybe a quick word about the author, Ilion Wu.
Yeah, absolutely. She's a really distinguished American author, scholar, too.
Yeah.
Got her PhD in English. And her specialty is this kind of narrative nonfiction history that feels like a novel, but it's meticulously researched.
Right. I remember her previous book, The Great Divorce. It showed she has this real knack for finding the human drama in the historical records.
That's her unique angle, I think. She combines hardcore academic research, I mean, years in archives, looking at the Craft's own story, abolitionist papers, legal stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, with a storyteller's instinct. So she can reconstruct not just what happened, but maybe how it felt, their fears, what drove them. She does it with empathy, but also, you know, precision.
Which gets us past just dates and facts into the experience.
Exactly.
Okay, so the book itself, Master, Slave, Husband, Wife, the core story is about Ellen and William Craft, right? Enslaved in Macon, Georgia. And in December 1848, they decide to make a run for it, a 1,000-mile journey north.
But it's that's just astonishing.
The plan, it's genius. Ellen, who is very light-skinned, her father, was actually her first enslaver. She disguises herself.
Not just as white, but as a man.
A wealthy white gentleman, Mr. William Johnson. And crucially, a disabled one.
Mm-hmm. And William, her husband, plays the role of his loyal enslaved servant, accompanying his master north.
It's layers upon layers.
And the book itself works on multiple levels, too. It's part thriller, you're on the edge of your seat, it's a profound love story, and it's sharp social commentary.
And the scope isn't just the escape itself, is it?
Not at all. Wu traces their whole journey, the 4 days of escape, yeah, but then becoming famous abolitionist speakers in the north.
Which brought its own dangers.
Huge dangers, especially after the 1850 Fugitive Slave Act. That crisis forced them into exile in England for, what, 2 decades?
Wow, 20 years.
Yeah, where they actually wrote and published their own account. And then they eventually returned after the Civil War, tried to set up a school and farm in Georgia. It's their whole life, really, dedicated to freedom.
So let's break down that journey, starting with life back in Macon. What pushed them to take such an enormous risk?
Now, they lived in Macon, Georgia. William was a skilled cabinet maker, Ellen a seamstress. So they had skills, but that offered zero protection from the fundamental cruelty of slavery.
And Wu highlights something specific about Ellen's situation, doesn't she? Her light skin.
Yes. Being the daughter of her enslaver brought its own kind of torment, particularly jealousy and cruelty from the enslaver's wife.
But the absolute core driver, so as to suggest, was the threat to their family.
Exactly. Under slavery, their marriage had no legal standing. None.
So the fear, the constant gnawing fear of being sold apart, separated forever. That was the catalyst.
It wasn't just about escaping forced labor. It was a fight to preserve their bond, their family, a deeply human act against a system designed to dehumanize them.
Which brings us to the plan itself, the performance.
Right, what Wu calls a masterful piece of social engineering. It was incredibly strategic for Ellen to pass as a wealthy white man.
Why a man specifically?
Because that role automatically granted authority and access. It neutralized threats. A black person, even a white woman traveling alone, would face constant scrutiny and restrictions, especially in the South. A white gentleman, however,
moves freely, gets respect.
Precisely. The disguise itself, it's fascinating. So much thought went into it. You mentioned the invalid persona.
Yes. Tell us about the key components.
Okay, three main things. First, the invalid. Ellen feigned poor health, kept her face partially wrapped. This gave Mr. Johnson a plausible reason to be traveling, maybe heading north for treatment, and also a reason to be somewhat aloof, maybe keep to himself, limiting interactions.
Made sense. Avoided too many questions.
Exactly. Second, and this is brilliant, the arm sling.
Ah, yes. This addresses a major vulnerability.
Huge. Ellen couldn't read or write. Enslaved people were forbidden literacy. But a white gentleman would need to sign hotel registers, tickets, documents. So by putting her right arm in a sling, pretending it was injured, she had the perfect excuse for William, her slave, to handle all the signing and paperwork. It completely masked her illiteracy.
Using the system's assumptions against itself? Incredible. And the third part.
The face poultice and spectacles. Green spectacles, bandages. These helped hide her smoother, younger features, maybe conceal her eyes, which might betray fear, and just generally added to the image of a sickly older man.
But the psychological toll, you have to imagine.
Immense. For Ellen, completely suppressing her identity, her voice, her posture, her fear, and projecting this aura of a privileged white man.
While William stood beside her, playing the part of the subservient slave, but inwardly he's the protector, the co-conspirator holding it all together.
The courage of that partnership
Yeah.
is just staggering.
So the escape itself, 1,000 miles. It sounds like something out of a movie, The Close
Oh,
Call.
absolutely. The tension starts almost immediately.
Yeah.
On the very first train journey out of Macon,
What happened?
they ran into someone William knew quite well. A man who struck up a friendly chat. William had to play his role perfectly, deflect, while Ellen sat there, silent, disguised. Imagine the
My
panic.
heart would be pounding out of my chest.
Right, and maybe the peak tension, according to the sources, came on a steamboat.
Okay.
Ellen, as Mr. Johnson, was naturally invited to dine at the captain's table, the place of honor reserved for white gentlemen.
Of course.
And sitting at that very table was a close friend of Colonel Collins, Ellen's actual enslaver.
No, a friend of the man she was fleeing? How did she handle that?
Incredible composure. She apparently leaned heavily on her invalid persona, claimed a headache, deafness in one ear, kept her face partially covered, barely spoke a word throughout the entire 4-day trip, essentially. William was her voice.
Just silence and performance.
Total performance.
Yeah.
And the irony Wu describes is just thick. Here's Ellen, this enslaved black woman playing a white man, being offered cigars, brandy, access to male-only spaces.
While William stands by the picture of loyalty.
And apparently, at one point, a white woman passenger even propositioned Ellen Mr. Johnson, commenting on how lucky he was to have such a devoted slave like William.
Wow. They were literally using the bedrock assumptions of that society about race, about gender, about class to shield themselves.
Perfectly. But reeking the North, Philadelphia,
It's her.
that wasn't the end of the danger, was it?
Sadly, no. Their story was so incredible, they became famous almost overnight in abolitionist circles.
Which made them visible.
Highly visible.
Yeah.
And then came the 1850 Fugitive Slave Act, a devastating law.
Yeah, it basically deputized the entire country, north and south, to capture escaped slaves. It meant federal power was fully behind the slaveholders.
And their former enslavers sent agent slave catchers after them.
Which led to this incredibly dramatic standoff in Boston.
Tell us about that.
The Boston Vigilance Committee, this coalition of black and white abolitionists, people like Theodore Parker, Lewis Hayden, they got word. The slave catchers were there with warrants.
And they acted.
They mobilized, surrounded the house where the crafts were hiding, formed a literal human shield, defying the federal marshals. It was a major confrontation.
Showing incredible bravery and solidarity.
Absolutely. But the whole episode proved a harsh reality.
That freedom in America was conditional,
Oh, yeah.
precarious.
And that the federal government was actively complicit in upholding slavery. There was no real sanctuary to be found on American soil.
Which is why they ultimately had to flee again.
To England, their final escape.
So, stepping back from the narrative, what are the big themes, the core messages that resonate from their story today?
I think the book really brings three key ideas to the surface. First is love as revolutionary resistance.
Explain that a bit.
Well, their whole escape, the immense risk, was driven by the desire to protect their marriage, their family bond, which the law denied,
Right.
in a system built to tear black families apart, just fighting to stay together, to affirm that love. That itself becomes a radical act. It speaks to the power of commitment against huge institutional forces, you know?
It's powerful. What's the second theme?
The performance of identity. Ellen's masquerade wasn't just a disguise. It fundamentally exposed how arbitrary race and gender really were.
Because she could perform it successfully.
Exactly. It showed these categories were social constructs, fluid things you could manipulate for survival. It makes you question the fixed hierarchies we still see, based on status or background. We all perform identity to some degree, but for the crafts, it was life or death.
A very high-stakes performance. And the third theme.
The power of narrative control.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just escape physically.
Yeah.
Once they were safe in England, they learned to read and write.
And wrote their own story.
Yes. Running 1,000 miles for freedom. By doing that, they seized control of their own narrative, their legacy. They asserted their intelligence, their agency, against a system that defined them as property, as voiceless.
It underlines the importance of telling your own story, defining yourself.
Absolutely.
The book seems full of really potent ideas, almost like quotes waiting to happen.
Oh, definitely. Wu distills their experience into some memorable lines.
Here's an example.
Well, capturing the sheer audacity and intellect behind the plan, there's this idea. The plan was a performance of identity,
yeah.
A 4-day masquerade designed not just to cross a border, but to dismantle the very logic of the world that had enslaved them.
So not just escape, but an attack on the system's core beliefs.
Exactly. It was intellectual resistance as much as physical.
What about the race aspect?
There's a line that really gets at that. Ellen Craft didn't just cross racial lines. She revealed that those lines had been drawn in sand all along.
Highlighting the fragility, the artificiality of it all.
Yeah, and then focusing on their strategy, how they used the system against itself. Their greatest weapon was not violence or stealth, but the slaveholders' own assumptions about who could and could not claim authority.
They leveraged prejudice.
Masterfully. They used the enslavers' rigid beliefs about status and appearance to become invisible in plain sight, essentially.
So how can we, you know, apply these insights today? What are the real-life applications for us listening?
Well, one clear takeaway is about creative resistance. The Crafts used what you might call asymmetric resistance. They couldn't overpower the system, so they had to outsmart it.
Application one, the power of creative resistance. So if you're facing some big institutional barrier, maybe at work or in some other system, don't just bang your head against the wall.
Right. Look for the cracks. Look for unconventional ways to use the system's own rules or assumptions against it. Be creative in your problem solving.
Okay. That makes sense. What else?
The Boston Vigilance Committee offers a model for allyship. Application two. Model of allyship.
How so?
Theirs wasn't just, you know, expressing support. They took real risks.
Mm-hmm.
Civil disobedience, potential physical harm, legal trouble, forming that human shield.
So the insight is that real allyship has to be active, concrete, protective. It's more than just words or hashtags.
Exactly. It often involves stepping up and taking a tangible risk alongside those who are vulnerable, challenging performative gestures.
Got it. And a third application.
Application three, strategic system navigation. The Crafts' entire story underscores how vital it is to deeply understand how power systems work.
Whether it's your workplace, the legal system, whatever.
Yes. You need to learn the rules, the assumptions, the internal contradictions, so you can navigate strategically. Find leverage points. Use the system's own logic to push for change, sometimes in unexpected ways.
So understanding the game to play it better, or even change the rules.
Precisely.
It really feels like Ilion Wu did monumental work here, bringing this story, which might have been overlooked, into the light as this essential American epic.
Absolutely.
It just shows that fighting for justice, for freedom, it takes physical courage, obviously, but also this incredible intellectual bravery.
Yeah, and I think that's the final takeaway for me. The fight for freedom is multifaceted, isn't it? It's not just one thing.
Right.
It demands that physical courage, yes, but also intellectual brilliance, deep emotional resilience, and maybe foundationally, the radical power of love and commitment. Perhaps the most powerful resistance, ultimately, is any act that fiercely affirms your own humanity, your own dignity, especially when the world around you is determined to deny it. That feels like the lasting insight from the Crafts story.
A powerful thought to end on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.